Welcome, everyone, to the Crit Rate Podcast for Wednesday, May 15th. This is episode 91. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by Justin Chow.
He's back.
And I'm joined by Liz Caetano.
Good evening.
She's back.
Does it feel a little crowded in here, Liz?
Yeah, right?
Wow. Both of you have told me how amazing the last podcast was. I'll be the judge of that. I'll listen to it and then I'll escort myself out. If that's the case.
Perfect.
I'm not proud.
You're right. This is better.
I mean, if it's better, it's better.
Yeah.
No, it's
JNL.
We had our little tryst last week. It was nice, but it is very good to have you back.
What is a tryst?
Yeah, I don't know where you're going with that.
A tryst. It's like a
tryst.
Define.
It tryst. might be tryst.
Yeah, I think it's tryst.
Tetris. All right. Anyway, cool. Look that up. Are you looking that up right now?
Yeah, I want to get a.
Are you really?
So it is tryst. TRYST. Private romantic rendezvous between lovers.
Oh.
There
good
it is. God, that was so
never do that again.
Unattractive.
It's terrible. But okay. Interesting. Tryst. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that.
Well, we're back for another episode of the Crit Rate Podcast. Proper crew in tow. We have a handful of topics last week. Certainly not as eventful as last week, which I feel like since the whole Xbox fallout, the discourse on like YouTube and Twitter, right, not getting any better.
It's palpable. No. Everybody's very hard on Xbox right now. People are like, they're even saying things like, listen, Phil Spencer, he's trying his best, but like, it's just not working.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of like calling for his head kind of stuff, you know?
You're killing companies that are doing well or studios that are doing well and studios that are not doing well. It's like you can't win as a studio, which makes you feel
bad.
They did come out, we talked about last week, like they must be coming out with something, right? Like some sort of justification. And then they did kind of.
They didn't
With that Sarah Bond interview?
Yeah.
That was awful.
They didn't answer
it came up and then they didn't address it.
Yeah. She was just like, expectations are always so high.
She's like,
she just sidestepped the question.
They're like, everybody said that you closed Tango Games after that game won a bunch of awards and everybody loved them. Why'd you do that?
Yeah.
And they were like, and she's like, you know what I love about the game industry? How creative it is.
Yeah.
And there are different types of success in their creativity.
Now, do you think that her internal monologue was just like words, words, words?
No. She had to have been trained on that question.
No way.
There's no way how you could not have been.
Dude, look at that.
Bloomberg?
Look at that interview again.
If she wasn't trained on it, that would be a terrible move by their PR team.
Yeah, they have to.
But
whether she was trained or not.
It seemed a little off the cuff based on how irrelevant it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, whether she was trained or not, she absolutely fumbled it, big time. Like, you could see it on her face, like, the fear of, like, oh, God.
Yeah. It was a bad move by their PR team either way. Either she was not trained on it or she was trained improperly.
They just shouldn't have taken the interview, frankly. I mean, what are they going to say, you know?
Games are creative mediums.
They're a publicly traded company, and they need to make moves to appease the shareholders.
Yeah.
So certainly this decision was driven by money in some respect.
Right.
So like, who cares? Like, why do you need to tell Bloomberg what's going on? The shareholders know you made a decision that was necessary for the growth of your company, I guess.
But the big question is, what were they losing money by funding that company? Like, by funding that studio, like, why would they cut them?
And in that, if that's the case, then what does success look like?
Nobody
put this
knows.
Out there.
It's a moving target. It's an invisible target.
If all of your games are coming out on Game Pass and therefore none of them are making sales, then how are you measuring the success of anything?
Right.
Yeah.
If it's not awards.
I'll put this out there.
Yeah.
So first off, there's a really great video from this guy, SkillUp, who talks about this stuff. SkillUp's awesome. He makes really, really great videos. Yeah, I did. Yeah. And one of the prevailing thoughts is they just had too much overhead. There was just too many studios. So then when they looked at their portfolio and they're like, okay, like someone's got to go. Like we need to raise the bottom line as fast as possible. And the way you do that is by cutting heads. So they're looking at their thing and they're like, well, who do you cut, right? It's like they can't cut. And if it was from the Bethesda section, it's like you can't cut Machine Games because Indiana Jones is coming out. You can't cut id because they're id. Right. And you can't cut core Bethesda. So
it would have the smallest impact because they just finished a game. So it's not like they're working on something that's going to come out soon.
And it's the ugliest, worst thing in the world. It's the worst thing they could have done for morale. But yeah, I mean, there is a way that you can twist this to make it seem logical. But it just It doesn't make it right, and it all sucks.
Decisions have to be more than logical. Like, if you are not making your employees happy, they are not going to want to work for you.
There's some balance of,
yes, we have to make money, and we have to reward employees for doing well.
Mm. I do believe that there's a point where sustainability and profits, there's like a point where profits are so high, or like the money that you have is so great, that you can literally invest that money into anything else and it would be more profitable. So therefore, people don't matter at a specific level. You know what I mean? Like, there's a point where it's just like, I can take all this money and just double it by putting it here instead. So like, why are we even trying to play with the art medium? You know,
right? Because if you think that way, it's a bad PR move.
Yeah. PR for sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, then you're losing money that way. Like, you have to, like, treating people poorly is a bad move for a company.
Yeah.
Like, you can't retain talent that way, and you're going to have bad PR, and people are going to then vote with their dollar after that. There's a reason that people get behind movements that aren't going to make them money. It's because not getting behind them is going to lose them more money.
I think
sustainability. Like, people don't want to pay to have something that's more sustainable, a more sustainable product. But if you don't, the problem is that people aren't going to want to buy your product because the consumer wants that.
I think the reality that they're coming up against is, after the purchase of Activision Blizzard King, they're likely
just
hurting to justify how much money they're making or how much money they spent.
And when they look at it, they're probably like,
okay, well, the assets that they gained just from Activision Blizzard are going to make them more money than everything else Xbox Studios is doing combined. So just funnel everything into the winner, you know?
So actually, do you want to throw it all on Game Pass?
I don't think they're going to throw it on Game Pass. I think it would be a colossal mistake, and I don't think there's any way that they could realistically do it on Game Pass.
To not have it
on PlayStation, even if PlayStation's getting a 30% clip on every one of those sales, they're still selling millions and millions of copies of it. So it's like, they would be so dumb to do that. And there's no way you're going to convert enough users to come over to Game Pass just on the basis of having Call of Duty launch there. All you're going to do is cannibalize a ridiculous amount of sales, and you're not going to get the sticking power that Game Pass needs in order to survive. It just makes sense from a consumer perspective to spend the $70. You know, because then here's the other thing.
You could still buy it. Games that come out on Game Pass, you can still buy.
Well, you can still buy, but like,
that's what I mean.
So by creating the option on Game Pass, this is why it doesn't make any sense. A lot of the people that play Call of Duty come in for a season and they fuck around with the new game and then they bounce. Right now, Activision has the benefit of cashing out $70 on everyone that wants to play the game for that whim versus dropping $15 to play it for 1 month and then they go away.
Yeah. Right.
They would rather make the $70 every time. Even if they sold it on PlayStation, if you sell it on PlayStation, you're still making $40.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, what are you doing? Like, it would be the stupidest thing they could possibly do to put it on Game Pass. It would be such a mistake.
So two things. One is, it's interesting that like Activision Blizzard's like, and I guess King, right? Their acquisition acquisition into Microsoft really does put like a weird imbalance between all the studios that they just bought versus the one that's really pumping out a lot of like hard earned cash. Right.
Yeah.
But this weird part is like, I wonder how much longevity Call of Duty really has, right? Because like, you think a lot of the younger generation, like Gen Z and Gen Alpha, I suppose, they're all on like Roblox and Fortnite, right?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, the only thing I'm thinking about is like, there's got to be a point where like our age, our demographic eventually stops playing these games, right? Because like kids and like life, right? I assume.
Yeah. So like, I think part of that is their most recent hedge. I don't know if you guys heard about them trying to like launch their app platform. So
Call of Duty's app platform?
No. So I don't have all the data offhand. I'd have to look up an article, but basically they were talking about launching their own like platform that they would run games on. So like,
who?
Microsoft.
Okay.
So like, they would have like their own app store. Because like the concept here is like, Candy Crush getting on the Apple App Store. Right. So every time somebody spends a dollar on that, Apple is taking like a 50% clip. So if they're able to transition that game, imagine if any mobile user had to purchase Candy Crush, Minecraft, etc. on their own platform. They get full clip on every microtransaction that gets processed in those platforms. So their new move is to pull them onto their own thing, which again is going to be a phenomenal expense to get off the ground. And like, I don't know. I think their thought around getting adoption to these new platforms like Game Pass, like xCloud, like all those sort of stuff, it's just foolish. Like it's just not strong enough yet. And maybe Call of Duty and Candy Crush are enough to pull people over to those things.
Candy Crush is already on there and it's free.
No, I'm saying like you're saying it's on the App Store.
Yeah, no.
So, but if you spend a dollar on an extra life in that, 50% of that goes to Apple. Microsoft wants that whole dollar.
So, interesting.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
But changing people's habits, as we've discussed, is hard.
Yes.
What are your thoughts, Justin, specifically on the whole, like on that video that we were watching by SkillUp? He was mentioning like how Activision Blizzard is like Activisioning Xbox.
Yeah. I mean, they're priming them to become, I'm under the impression that they are priming them to become like a software a producer.
Activision is priming Xbox?
Because of how demonstrably it's going to change their business model and how much money they're going to make off of software, I don't think they're going to realize that it doesn't serve them to create hardware and try to sustain an entire ecosystem when they can just cash out completely on their software portion. So if they just had Xbox Game Studios and they made all the next Fallouts and all the Call of Duties and all this sort of stuff,
dropped it on Sony,
and they wouldn't have to pay any of their employees, they wouldn't have to pay a hardware division, they wouldn't have to, you know, worry about Game Pass anymore, and they just sold all of their games, they would make crazy amounts of money. So I think it's so ultimately I think it's just kind of like forcing their hand in that direction.
So they're just going to be, it sounds like a break if in case of emergency situation, but like, they did say that they're coming out with another generation of hardware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, like, they were trying to
quell, the suspicions that they were trying to get out of the hardware.
I don't want to live in a world where it's just Nintendo and Sony. That's weird.
Yeah, me neither.
This is the difference where it's like, the difference between Xbox and Sony, and I can't tell you which one's better or worse, but I'm pretty sure Xbox is worse. Microsoft is just talking too much, whereas PlayStation is just not talking at all. You know, like we don't really know what's going on with PlayStation most of the time.
I don't think they need to.
They definitely don't need to. But by Xbox saying shit constantly, it puts them in a position where they have to back it up. So when you have stuff like, okay,
when they say everything has to come out compatible for the Xbox 360 and the Xbox at the same time, then they don't launch Baldur's Gate on time, and then they lose hundreds of thousands of dollars
and every platform. Xbox first party game is going to release day and date on Game Pass. Mistake.
Right.
Do you think, hey, these are our exclusive games? No, they're not. Now they're on PlayStation, and it's only a matter of time. Like they in that same or what you call it, in the same breath where they talked to about like profits and stuff, they were like, oh yeah, Microsoft has 7 of the top 20 games on PlayStation right now, or 7 of the top 10 games on PlayStation right now. And it's like, okay, fair enough, like that's true, but like if that's the thing that you're boasting, then you are celebrating the fact that you don't have hardware exclusives anymore, that like you don't care where this stuff is being played. And it's like, okay, fair enough, then lean in, you know what I mean? Like that's
but they had, I mean, they said the thing about the hardware because they kind of had to, because whatever,
they were in a corner,
right? Yeah, every news that was coming out was like, Xbox is canceling their hardware, and they're like, no, we're coming out with more hardware. It's okay to buy Xbox stuff still.
It wasn't that they were canceling the hardware. It was like, oh, we're giving up exclusives. And it's like, oh, well, if you give up exclusives, then there's no point to have your platform. And they're like, no, but they're going to play the best on Xbox. And it's like, will they?
Yeah, it was like rumors swirling around that they had to quash so that people wouldn't stop buying their stuff.
You know, the only thing that I really want from like the Xbox camp is quick resume. That's all I want.
Right.
Just make. I hope that's on PS5 Pro.
Me too.
I hope it's on PS5 Pro.
It would be a tall order.
Hypothetical question. Obviously, it could go a little too far. So let me know if it's like a too broad of a topic. But like, if Xbox gets out of the hardware market, right? What other key tech companies might fill the place? And like, what would there be? What would their like marketable differentiator be? Right. So if I look at Google, I look at Apple, I look at even Steam, right? Steam is playing with hardware a lot, and like that could be the next.
I mean, The Steam Deck is like a force to be reckoned with
apparently,
right now.
Right? Yeah. And like, imagine if they just made a console for Steam, which is basically a computer that hooks into your TV. Now you have all of these games that are already on your computer.
That would be huge.
The Steam Deck is
that would be huge.
The Steam Deck is that thing. It's a dockable device. It's basically
so
a Switch.
Steam comes in with a very fascinating differentiator, which is I get all of the games, even ones you've never fucking heard of, and some of them are only $1 or $2 or humble bundled, and you can play them on your TV or in handheld. Okay, that's kind of cool. That's kind of hot, right? Second thing, if you look at like Google or Amazon, imagine if they came in and came back to the game, right? It would really just, they would have to create something. They can't create exclusivity, really, because then they would have to have a powerful machine, which is a lot of money to invest into.
Right.
So alternatively, they would have to do something on the cheaper end, like the digital Chromecast sticks or like the, you know, streaming services again.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, not, Google, not yeah, it I, wasn't I, working I, right, I do, for Google
I do,
once.
I do disagree with that. I think the only, Amazon can't do it. Google won't do it because they've failed too many times.
Yeah, failed once already.
Frankly, I think Apple would probably have the best bet because they have such an... like
their hardware is sick.
They own 80% of the mobile market. Like, no. Almost... of mobile
like
phones?
40.
No, it's like 80%.
No.
No. That's maybe in the U.S.
Yeah.
Maybe in the U.S.
Maybe.
Maybe in the U.S.
Yeah. But globally, it's not like...
I remember it was like,
people in Europe don't all have iPhones. Like,
yeah, they don't have iPhones, yeah. Actually. And in China, it's like Huawei all day.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure even in the U.S.
60%.
In the U.S. specifically or in the world? Because that's crazy.
As of February, smartphone market in the U.S. is 60%. Android is 38%.
Yeah. Wow.
Apple also
has the largest...
closer
than I thought.
Apple also has the largest market share in China.
Apple?
Yeah.
Has what market share?
The largest market share in China.
Wow. That's surprising.
For Huawei. Huawei is supposed to be a force to be reckoned with, but I guess not.
I mean, I'm sure they still are.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so...
wild.
Anyway, so the point that I'm getting at, the reason why I brought that up is, like, people that exist in the Apple ecosystem stay in the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, but they're not all gamers.
They're not all gamers, but Apple has also delved into the world of exclusives and gaming with Apple Arcade.
Right.
Like, they have exclusive Square Enix titles. Like, they have...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a game called Fantasia. It's, like, supposed to be pretty good. But anyway, and they had that weird Journey knockoff game.
Apple and Steam. Steam is the new Microsoft.
Fly, Sky, something like that.
Something like that. But the point is I think if somebody was going to make a hardware move, I could see Apple doing it. And I think Steam is already there.
Yeah.
Like, the Steam Deck really was a game changer. It was a trend buck from Nintendo. Like, when Nintendo showed, like, hey, mobile is like, you know, or portable consoles
is the new
viable.
Cool. Yeah.
They absolutely jumped on that trend, but I think they've really cemented themselves as like a serious contender. So, but nobody looks at them like a console manufacturer.
Because there's too much of like a PC sweat stain.
Yeah. No, but like, it is a thing. I don't know. I am under the impression that Xbox's software modelification is sort of inevitable.
Yeah, they have too much. I mean, they're all in that. Like, they haven't been acquiring hardware. Well, they are a hardware company.
The reality is,
software.
The reality is, they have failed too often over the last few years for them. Like,
just two.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're making great software.
They're not making great software.
Like,
their hardware is barely being adopted in the grand spectrum of things. They're not even close to what PlayStation's able to do as far as market share. And it's the kind of thing where it ultimately, with the acquisition of Activision, it just won't make sense. It's just an unnecessary expense in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, well, then they better get a lot better at producing software.
Yeah.
Because so far, their hardware is pretty good, and their software is terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe it's their hardware and their software are good, but their business model is bad.
Games are bad.
No, their games are bad. Their games are bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay.
That's what we're saying.
They
like, the games that they've been coming
out
with.
The making bad games problem.
But I don't know. Yeah. And that's funny that didn't work.
Yeah.
Then it's got to be management, I suppose.
We had this whole conversation last week about how involved are they, and are they too involved or not involved enough? But they're the common denominator.
Right.
They're definitely the problem.
Everybody's like, we're going to let artists be artists. No.
Well, I'm glad that we got to dig into this a little bit because it's still very relevant.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
It's the talk of the town. But we do have other news to dive into. But before we get into some of the new stuff, Liz, what have you been playing?
So last week I said I was going to try Rise of the Ronin.
Yes.
And I did. Excellent. Actively playing it. I am a few hours in right now. I am thoroughly enjoying it, actually.
Does it feel AAA, Sony, second party type stuff?
It feels, I mean, when I like first turned it on and I'm watching it, I'm like, this is legit. Like, this is a lot more legit than I thought it was going to be. Yeah. Like, it's a solid game. It looks great. It runs like crisp. I haven't had any technical issues at all. Like, awesome. Not even a peep. Like, the cutscenes look great. The animation, like, while you're playing it, all that looks great. And mechanically, it's all really buttoned up.
Yeah.
It's all very solid. It's like an interesting premise. I'm not sure how much we want to get into like the story of it.
What's your motivation?
Your motivation is you're searching for someone.
Oh, okay.
Who's important to you.
It's either searching for somebody or revenge.
Yes.
This one's a mix of both?
We'll see. Well, I mean, we'll see. I think the story's going to go into some interesting directions. Probably pretty predictable because I'm only a few hours in and I'm already like, oh, this is probably it's probably gonna be a few twists, and here's probably what the twists are gonna be.
He's your father all along.
Yeah, but it's pretty sophisticated, I think. It's pretty good storytelling. I was actually pretty impressed with the combat too.
Yeah. What is it like? I mean, give me a parable, because my gut tells me that it's like open worldy combat, like in Assassin's Creed or Ghost of Tsushima or something like that. But it's made by Koei Tecmo, so I'm like, is it more Neo Dark Souls-y? Like, I don't really know.
It is. So in general, the game is like very similar to Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Like, sort of the feel of it, how you're moving around, even like the equipment that you're picking up, like in the most recent Assassin's Creed games, like the equipment game sort of is like you just get a ton of equipment all the time and you're constantly like each one's like, you know, one or two attack points higher and they all have a couple abilities and you just keep changing them out. Like,
that was also Neo.
Yeah.
Was very
okay. I did
like
not
that.
Play Neo. So it's very, very similar. And a lot, and how you're interacting with it too is like you get to this open world and you're doing side missions for people, whatever, learning a little bit. You get to an area and you're like, okay, now I'm going to stealth do this part. It's much harder than Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Probably more in like a Neo feel to it. Like I started up the game and played like the first kind of like difficult fight. I died like 4 times.
Okay.
If not more. I died many times. And I got the little thing that came up that was like, do you want to make this easier? I'm like, I do not want to make this easier because I'm not a quitter.
Yeah. Damn it. The Devil May Cry thing.
Yeah. So then I realized that like part of the mechanics is like, all right, I have to like sit and learn and really think about this. I can't just like charge in like an Assassin's Creed game. So it is probably a little bit more, you know, Dark Souls-y, kind of like that. Like
are you parrying and dodge rolling and
you
such?
You are parrying and dodge rolling. The parrying is like very precise.
Yeah,
it is not easy to parry.
Okay,
and the window is like very fine. And I think it's okay that the window's so fine. The one problem I have with it though is that the enemies' movements are pretty unpredictable.
Okay,
so like a guy can come swinging at you, and you're like, okay, he's gonna land a hit, you know, right now, so this is what I parry, and then he takes one extra step and I'm like, oh great, now I'm like, so it makes it almost an unviable like tactic.
Yeah. It's just not reliable.
It's not reliable because like the enemies aren't consistent enough that, and maybe they will be after some amount of time, but for right now, like, they're not consistent enough that I can tell when their attacks are coming because they vary so greatly, and a lot of the attacks look really similar. So like one attack, it'll be like, oh, he hits you twice and you have to parry twice, and the other one's like, he hits you 3 times, and so then like if you're not sort of ready for it, and then the third one comes and then you get hit and you have to parry at least the last one in order to sort of get the benefits of the parry.
I see. Okay. So like what's good about like Sekiro and like I would say other From Software games, Elden Ring and whatnot, the parry system was always like, if you mess that up, it's like on you, because like it's pretty telegraphed most of the times, I feel.
Yeah.
And like,
that's how it's like in Stellar Blade.
Right. But then you have other games that have the parry. I would also say like Neo is kind of like that, where it's like almost too janky that it's like unreliable and like it's the pattern recognition is too difficult.
Yeah.
It's not fair. It doesn't seem natural.
It doesn't feel fair. Yeah. Because the moves all kind of look alike, and they can do drastically different things. Yeah. The timing on them can be drastically different.
I'll touch on this when I talk about Stellar Blade, but it has an interesting quirk to its parry system as well, where it's like it's not. I'll talk about it later.
So it's okay, but I'm not quite sure. Should I know more about these enemies? And, like, is this a viable way of working, like, a way of playing? Or, like, is the system broken? Or is it me? Can I just not figure it out? So there's, like, a little bit of uncertainty there. Like, I don't have enough confidence in it that I'm, like, I feel like when you're playing, like, a Soulsborne game, you're like, okay, there is a way to do this. And if I can't get it done, like, I have to figure it out.
Yeah.
But when I'm playing this, I'm, like...
If you dodge left, maybe you dodge right. And if you don't dodge left or right, maybe you dodge forward.
Like,
you know?
Right? Like, there's a solution. Like, when I'm playing this, I'm like, I don't know if this... I don't know if this is me. Like, I think this might be you guys.
I will say Neo, in respect to Souls games, was way less forgiving. Like, yeah. Dark Souls, I think those games have a... I think part of the reason why those games are so acclaimed is because there is a very heavy amount of, like, logic and sense and,
no jank.
Yeah, everything is choreographed very, very well. And it feels like it's your fault if you screw up.
Yeah.
In Neo, it's like, it is borderline unfair because there's not enough opportunity to read or the window to react the correct way is too small or
the punishing
something.
Is too punishing. Like in the Souls games, it's like, it's slow and it's punishing. It's like, if you mess this up, it'll punish you with like pretty hard hits, right? And that's the punishment. But in like Neo, it's kind of like, I'm just going to take that from you. Like,
yeah.
It's not like giving you the chance to react.
Yeah.
I will say, I mean, I did not play Neo, but I can't imagine that this game is as hard as Neo was or like as
Neo
hard
is,
as any of...
Neo is brutal.
Yeah, it's definitely not there. Like it plays a lot more like an Assassin's Creed game than it does like a Soulsborne game.
Okay.
The combat's... Despite this caveat, like, it is fairly interesting. I mean, it's pretty, like, you can parry, you can dodge, you have, like, a normal attack, and then you have a couple special attacks. And I'm pretty early. It looks like it's going to get pretty, looks like it's going to be a long game, because I'm doing a lot of side stuff, and, like, I'm not that far into the story. And there's, like, different sort of sword, there's different weapons you can get, and then also different sword stances, which I really haven't messed with, but... I assume
that's very Neo. Neo is all stances. Like you would hold like L1 and change to like stone stance and wind stance, and and that was awesome.
That was also
really
Ghost of Tsushima too.
Oh yeah, true.
Yeah, that's true. So I haven't gotten that far into that yet. So more to come. I'm sure that will change the game drastically.
Cool. Well, it's good to hear that the game is.
I mean,
at the very least, good and interesting.
I think the game is solid. I think the story is interested. I know exactly what's going on. I know exactly what my motivation is.
Awesome.
There's also like a bonding system. Was this Neo?
Ooh.
Okay.
So as you meet characters, I think so.
Oh, cool.
As you meet characters throughout your story, like some of them will join your clan, kind of. I'm not sure what word they use for it, but like then you can meet up with like when you go to like rest at your, you know, wherever your
camp.
Yeah, it's like a
cohort
bonfire.
They're not bonfire. It's like a specific area, like
cabin,
a specific building that you go to.
Mansion.
Yeah, your house, I guess.
Powwow. Can you buy furniture for this house?
Yes, you can.
Wow.
I'm gonna play
Justin. I was gonna say
it's not a ton, but there's like you can get decorations that you can put up.
Cool.
You can't. You also though you can't walk around the house.
Oh.
You just go
what
there,
is that?
And then like you're in, and then like once you're in the house, you're kind of sitting around like a campfire type area. And once you're there, it's like a menu screen, and then you can like scroll through your current bonds,
homies.
And you can like talk to whoever's there and increase your bond with them. You can give them gifts also, but that's like a separate. You'll do that. You'll go to a separate area, go to a separate cutscene.
Interesting.
So like, I'm not that super interested in like this whole bonding system, but
yeah.
I'm sure you.
I'll just watch you. Tell me when you're playing so I can watch it. Yeah. I'll take that.
But I'm sure you'll like that. So so that's interesting. Like, I mean, there's a lot of like different systems going on, but overall it's very clean.
That's pretty cool.
I'm liking it. It's got a good, you know, feedback loop. There's definitely a lot of like open worldy stuff, but yep. You know, I like that kind of stuff.
How's the towns? The towns look really full in the trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. They look really lively.
But there's only really, so far I've only gotten to one like city.
Yeah.
And then everything else is just like little, you know, kind of gatherings of huts.
That's cool.
But the city is like very clean, very full, a lot of people around. It's very similar to Assassin's Creed in that, like, you know, if you do bad things, yeah. then you'll get in more notoriety and then the police will come for you.
The Shogun.
And then frames. the whole sort of premise also is that there's two sort of paths that you can go. You can go like pro shogun or pro shogunate or anti shogunate.
Like, what's it called? It's factions.
Like like it's more like a, I think it's more kind of like a karma system. Like,
yeah.
So I haven't really gotten far enough.
Good or bad, lawful or chaotic.
Do you fight exactly. for honor or not for honor?
Right.
Yeah, I haven't gotten far enough in the story to like really make a decision about whether or not I'm pro or. Anti-shogunate.
Cool. Yeah, the story should tell you. You know what I mean?
That's kind of what I feel. But yeah, you're like part of this clan that you eventually leave, and like the clan was anti-shogunate. So I'm like, should I be anti-shogunate? But then I left the
clan. But you left
it. So like I could do whatever I want.
You
didn't leave the clan because you didn't believe in their teaching. So I don't know.
All right.
I think I'm going to go anti-shogunate.
I think that I might just, but Stellar Blade, she's got a nice butt. But this sounds really good.
I mean, it's good.
This sounds super depthy. Like, I was afraid that there wasn't going to be more stuff than just, like, kind of the combat part. And I'm like, I've played Neo before. It's not, I mean, whatever.
No. I mean, it feels good. There are, like,
a few... Well, it's like if you had a website where you could find ratings that were based on your personality, it would tell you exactly which one is a better fit for you.
Everybody playing this game right now, rate it on critrate.io.
Yeah,
let us know what you think.
Do that.
So yeah, it's very good. There's a few things that, as I'm playing it, because I've played, like, so much Assassin's Creed, I'm like... Assassin's Creed does this better. Like, it's very much trying to adopt a lot of Assassin's Creed mechanics, and it's not always pulling them off as well. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, like if you're in a town, you're trying to do it stealthy, and you go to assassinate someone in Assassin's Creed, it will tell you like this person's too strong for you to assassinate, and it will tell you how much damage it's going to do to them when you assassinate them. Like, okay, so that's good information. So you'd be like, okay, I'll save that person for last because I'll go kill the guys I can kill. This game does not do that, which is pretty annoying.
So you'll just get yourself into a fucked up situation.
And I'm trying
Dark Souls Catacombs
exactly.
Situation.
Like, I'm trying to do this whole area stealthy, and then I accidentally try to assassinate like the boss, and I'm like, ugh, great. Or, like one time, like I was in a mission and I accidentally like, killed the boss, and there was optional stuff, and like I can't go back and do. I think you can replay missions, but like essentially the mission just like ended, and I was like, I didn't. There was other stuff I wanted to do, and like now that those options are kind of just
interesting.
Gone for me.
I see.
So that's kind of frustrating. Same thing, like, if you're going to, like, shoot someone with an arrow, like, it won't tell you how much damage it's going to do to them. So, like, I'm like...
Oh, so you're not going to, like, one-shot them? Or, like,
you... It looks like you're going to one-shot them, like, based on how I'm aiming, and then they'll fall. It'll be like, oops, they're actually alive. And then they scream, and they let everybody else know. So it's hard. I don't know if maybe that
like
stuff
that.
Is coming later, or if it's just, like, that's not how they intended you to
Checking
play the
game.
Checking
your game's display
like,
options, see if there's, like, a add number damage.
I feel like...
I'm wondering if they... If they wanted to make it like, you know, Neo Assassin's Creed and that like it was sort of punishing and like you can make them like, you know, it's more realistic, right? Like if I was actually going to assassinate somebody, I don't know.
Do characters have health bars?
What?
Do characters have health bars?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's what I mean. As soon as I lock onto a character, I can see their like stun and health.
I feel like if you shoot somebody in the neck with an arrow, they should die. Like, I feel like there should be, like, a part in the game where it's just like, this will be an instant kill. You can rely on that if you hit them in the neck.
What if they've
and
only ever
not,
done shrugs
it's
their
unpredictable.
Whole life? And their neck is just a little bit thicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
So that part is also unpredictable. So, and I don't, again, like, maybe it's kind of like the pairing system. Like, maybe they mean for it to be unpredictable. But I think there's a reason that... People, you know, sometimes people have an innovation because it's like, oh, nobody thought of it and what a great idea.
Yeah.
And other times people have an innovation because they're trying to think of something different. And like the way that people are typically doing it is the right way.
Yeah,
like there's a reason they do it.
I will say that
the standard way.
I came up against something like this. If I can.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that your feelings on
that
this
is
game
my take.
So far? Okay. I do want to mention this. I do want to mention this in respect to Stellar Blade, because I think there is an interesting parable here. I was talking about the parrying system before.
Yeah.
So first off, Stellar Blade, I'm like way more into it now. This game is fucking great. It's really, really... I mean, it's just really great. Like, it has a high triple A-ness to it, where, like, the graphics are obviously amazing. There's, like, really cool-looking particle effects going on. The battle system is super interesting, but there's some important baselining to go on first. First thing, the game is very, like, PS2-esque. And what I mean by that is it is a highly linear experience. Like, you're moving through certain areas. There are
Gaiden kind of situation.
Yeah, exactly. There are hub worlds that you'll get to and can do stuff with, and some open world sections where you're running around a big field just fighting stuff.
I kind of like that, though.
Yeah, but primarily...
It's kind of nice in every other game you play is like open world game that you can just have
after
linear
Final Fantasy VII, I'm like, this is the good parts of Final Fantasy VII. You know what I mean?
Like, when I got to Nier after Final Fantasy VII and it got to the open world area, I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, so this game is a lot more like, you know, it's like it's wide hallways, you know, so you can find corners and stuff, but you're ultimately going in one direction, you know? So that's awesome. The music is so good. Like, you know what it is? Like, okay, I'm going to try to say this in the kindest way possible, but I'm just going to be pretty blatant. This game is clearly taking a lot of inspiration from Nier Automata.
Yeah.
Like, it is very far up that game's ass. It's, like, not even funny. Like,
they both have big asses.
A lot of the music is very similar. A lot of the combat is very similar. There's obviously, like, this heavy focus on this female character, you know, that's kind of a robot, you know?
Right.
It's, like...
The female anatomy.
Yeah. It's
whatever do you mean?
Yeah. So there's a lot of that going on. But in general, I am intrigued by the story, albeit a very basic story. Even the director of the game was like, we put the focus here 70% on action, 30% on narrative. They're like, we want you to have enough of a thread to, like, get to the next thing, but, like, you don't really need to be, like, querying the story too much. Like, it's pretty blatant, you know?
70% on ass, 30% on personality.
That's right. 30% on so yeah, the story is, like, fine, and it moves along, and it's kind of, like, silly in ways. I'm saying silly, like, not like narratively intended to be silly, but it'll just do things that seem like they come out of left field, but the game acknowledges that they come out of left field.
Yeah.
Like, at one point you go see this guy named the Oracle, and he's, like, this old robot man, and you're talking to this old robot man, and it's doing the type of thing like in Witcher where it's like when a character's talking, it kind of like zooms in on their portrait and it's just like talking to them. So like it's like you and this old man and like your two teammates or whatever, and then just out of nowhere this other character is just there talking to you, and it's like the guy's like, oh, please step back or whatever, and then one of the characters is just like, where did you come from? Like, who are you? You know? And it's like, cool, I was thinking that. So it's like clearly acknowledging, like, this is a stupid way to just bring a character into this thing, but whatever. So all of that being said, the game itself rooted in high action, and it's a brawler, you know, it shares a lot of commonality with stuff like Nier Automata, that platinum style, Devil May Cry style combat where, you know, you're doing combos that are fairly simple, you know, square, triangle, 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 square, you know, stuff like that. Light attacks and heavy attacks. You can incorporate this like gun later in the game. Like you get that sort of a little ways in. And there's a lot of interesting dynamics to the combat where there is a heavy emphasis on parrying and dodging, specifically perfect dodging and perfect parrying, right, where it'll give you a pretty like significant combat advantage. Like you could just block attacks, but if you parry them correctly, you'll like knock the enemy back and you can do follow-up attacks. Like you can combo directly out of parries in different ways than like normal combos. But then also most enemies have like these little star ratings, sort of similar to Sekiro's stagger meter, where if you can perfect parry them enough times in a row, then you'll kind of break them and just totally fuck them up afterwards, which is cool.
That's pretty cool.
The interesting part about like the jankiness, we were talking about how there's like some parry systems that just don't feel exactly right. This game, when you start it, it feels straight up wrong. Like I couldn't understand the timing of the parry at all. And it's like, this is not a foreign concept. We've played dozens of games with parries at this point. So I'm like, I don't understand what I'm not getting about this. But I think because this is kind of like this developer's first try at this kind of thing, they had to make it a little bit more, I don't know how you would say it, like a little bit more, like clunky is not the word, but like more like overt, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you lead the parry like what I would consider to be far ahead of what you would do in a Dark Souls or a Sekiro or whatever. It's like when you see the enemy like coming in, you've got to block like a full half second before you think you're going to get hit for it to like happen.
That is weird.
So that's what it was until
Rise of Ronin is the opposite.
Until,
last second.
So this is the joke.
That's how it should be.
This is the joke. Until I realized in the skill tree, there's a whole branch that's like, make parrying easier. So then you start getting those, and you're like, oh, now the timing starts to feel normal. Right. So they clearly built it with normal timing parry and then just stretched it out and made it stupider until you get the things, which I kind of hate that.
That's
but like
silly.
Yeah.
If anything, they should have made it more exact and then... By getting it, then it makes it fluffier,
more broad.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, broad. For,
yeah, it's weird. There's definitely like every like all of your actions like that feel really wide at the beginning. Like you need to be like you have to lead further than feels natural.
Do you attack faster? Like is that part of the skill tree too? You start doing moves faster because like I remember seeing gameplay footage and thinking this is slow.
So there are okay. So that's a multifaceted question. On one level, yes, there are skill tree stuff that make your moves faster, but you also, your character has a number of different gear slots that you can put stuff in.
Oh, cool.
And those can affect many parts of your character, including speed, range, damage, crit rate, all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So speed is a dynamic there where it's like you will just attack faster if you stack skills into your speed stat, you know? So yeah, I would say in general, the attacking feels kind of normal. It's definitely a dance, you know, it's not so much like just go in and like rush enemies down. There is ways that you can do that, but most of the time you're kind of like playing with the enemy and kind of like finding your opportunities and using certain combos, like certain strings that make sense for certain enemies. Mm-hmm. So that element's really cool. And then the last part of the combat that I want to mention that I really, really like is they have these two additional sort of like special context sensitive moves where if an enemy is trying to strike you with like a really like they're like lunging at you, if they're doing like a lunge attack, they'll have this like blue spark around them and that will show you that they're about to initiate. This is sort of what I mean where everything's very wide. If they spark blue, it's telling you this character is about to lunge, and then a half second later your weapon sparks blue. So then if you hit up and dodge at that time, you'll teleport behind the character and begin an attack string from behind them.
Cool.
So it's called a blink. So it's like you would think on the first sight of blue, you would hit this button, but you don't. You see that and then you're like, okay, I'm getting ready to hit up and circle, and then you hit it afterwards.
That's an interesting dynamic.
Weird,
yeah, it's a little weird, but
I kind of like that. It's different.
It makes doing those things a lot easier and... But like the byproduct of that is it makes basically every combat encounter like pretty approachable and really like fun to watch.
Yeah,
you know, that being said, the game is definitely like Dark Souls. You know, there's campfires that respawn enemies and all this kind of stuff. And if you are not paying attention, any enemy can likely kill you. Although because of the skill trees and like the gear slots and all that, it feels like it's only getting easier. You know, like it's hardest at the beginning of the game. And it, when it throws bosses at you, like they obviously like change the dynamics pretty drastically. But like when you encounter the same mobs, it's like you are just demolishing them later in the game.
Okay.
So there's some coolness around that.
That's good. Okay.
So
it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does sound kind of shallow, but really polished, I guess.
It's like a known quantity. You know what I mean? I can guarantee you this is not going to be the game that's going to like change your mind about the genre or like, you know, totally inspire you and be like, oh my God, this is like one of my favorite games of all time. Like, I don't think that it's in that category at all.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like I'm having fun every time I turn this game on.
Yeah.
You know,
that's cool.
The boobs are great too. What have you been playing, Justin?
So there's two games specifically that I want to talk about. One is Unicorn Overlord, and the second one is this super like hyped and like well reviewed game, Animal Well. I'm not sure if you guys have talked about that last week.
I played it just to the first save point.
Yeah,
so okay. I don't really have any.
I'm not going to tell you anything context. Particular. I'm going to say. Let me start with Unicorn Overlord. So like, I've played Unicorn Overlord for quite a bit of time now, and Alex was talking about it yesterday too, and he put it in good perspectives. But I'll try to start with. So the game itself, it's like I originally mentioned, it's kind of like a tactics slash like, you know, rock paper scissors type of like unit-based strategy game, right?
Yeah.
But with some like interesting like tower defense, like real-time strategy mechanics to it. It's like bad guys are coming down the road in these specific areas, and you have like multiple routes that you can take your units, and then you have a specific amount of resources in order for you to spawn units and then use their abilities and like attack them, and you want to attack specific other units with specific units that you have so that you have an advantage, right? And it tells you pretty acutely how much damage you're going to take and how much damage you're going to do, right?
So Fire Emblem style.
Yeah, exactly. But Fire Emblem, and this is where Alex's insight really started coming in. Like, we started talking about it yesterday. He's like, how do you feel about this game? And part of me is like, well, I fell asleep during the last battle, which means it's not really gripping me. There's something about it that's not just not like really as interesting as I wish it was. It's a beautiful game, but like the fighting, the battle, which is all of the game pretty much, the story itself is pretty, I wouldn't say like lackluster. It's like, you know, I'm the known like prince that everybody thought was dead, and now I'm coming back to reclaim my throne and like save the, you know, the nation from the oppressors that is this other country that came in and like took our shit, right?
Yeah.
And then your mission basically is to go and liberate different towns, and then you help out other people with their own problems. Then they join your party, and then you create an army, basically, right? Mm-hmm. As a rebellion force. The fighting, though, and as I was saying, like the real time strategy slash tower defense thing. A part of it is like there's no real moment in the fights that feel critical or particularly gripping or risky or consequenceful, because like
a boss fight,
even the boss fights, like your characters can die and they'll, you know, you heal them. There's not a problem. There's revive orbs all over the place. And like another piece is like when you're about to go into a fight, it's like I know exactly how this is going to end because it tells you whether or not you're going to kill them and how much damage you're going to be taking. And then at the very end, when there's a boss, and when there's a boss,
no, he said there's no element of chance. Yeah. So like, there's no moment of like anxiety a little bit where you're like, oh, will they, won't they? How much damage will I do? Like he said, there's none of that, which almost like takes that excitement out of the battle.
In Fire Emblem, you get crits sometimes.
So that was the thing is, and sometimes you miss, but this will tell you how much damage you're gonna do, thinking and knowing that you're gonna miss or not miss. Like it tells you what it's gonna be like. So there's no excitement really. And like in Fire Emblem, you're moving one unit at a time, and like you're placing them in like precarious situations based off of where
because on their turn what's gonna happen
like where are they gonna move, and you have to like plan that out. And like, but here it's just like your two characters and all of your forces are just slowly converging to each other, and then at a point where you're about to win and there's like the boss at the final like keep that you have to go, you just converge all of your units and then you can just select whichever ones you want to fight the thing, and it just feels like I'm going from like one set piece scene that's already gonna to another, and there's really no challenge per se. Like it doesn't seem
you're just kind of going through the motions.
Yeah, and like I'm wondering if I'm gonna get to a point where I've collected all of my like army people and I've gone through these stories and I stop recognizing new classes, and then it's gonna start getting like harder and more interesting. Like enemies are gonna be coming from multiple different directions, and I have different units that I have to send in specific directions, which means that they can't like converge on one piece at a time.
How many hours have you played for so far?
Probably around like 8 to 10 at this point.
Okay.
And it's like, it's okay, but like
I think the game's fairly short. Like I think it's like 25 hours or something like that.
Maybe. I mean,
I'm not sure.
The way that you're describing it, I get that sort of same feeling playing like a lot of maybe smaller indie games where like they seem like they had an idea but they didn't quite figure it out, and like you're just kind of like it's like when like they come out with like oh, they have this great like sort of platformer game, and you're kind of just like walking through the world and there are no puzzles, and you're like you guys like you don't really know what makes this type of game exciting, and you're just like trying to make your spin on like, oh, we're making a you know, a platformer or make it a tactics game and it's going to look like this. And I'm like, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
this aesthetic or like this little gimmick that you have or whatever it is, it's not enough to like, you don't really understand what you're doing almost.
It's just like the pieces, there's a lot of different, yeah, I like what you said there. It's like basically there's a lot of different like, not genres, but like mechanics that they wanted to add all together that don't play to as well as you'd think that they would.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know, I'm going to keep playing it and see where it goes, but I definitely feel like in certain circumstances, the game itself, really, really, it's like the tower defense part, which is just like, I can just keep a character here and have him keep healing while they just keep throwing bad guys at me. And I'm just like, but like, why am I doing that? Like, what is this? Like, this doesn't seem that much fun. It feels like I'm just wasting time. I'm not really like thinking critically as to like how to position my units. Whereas like Fire Emblem, it's like, you have to be precise with what square you put them in. Otherwise, if they're surrounded, two turns with an arrow shot from the back and like that character is now dead forever. You know?
It's almost like after the enemy's turn, you can kind of like exhale and be like, okay, I made it. Yeah. All right, now let's figure out like how we set myself up for the next enemy turn.
You know? I can't tell you how many times in Fire Emblem where there was like a critical miss and I was like, without that miss, that character would have been dead. And then I'm like, whoa. And there's a moment where it's like, I now have like a stronger like bond to both the character and the game and the the consequences of the fight and my actions speak way more. In this game, it doesn't seem like there's much consequences at all. My characters could all die, and like I could still beat the final guy, and like that'd be fine. It's just that I don't lose anything in particular. I'm not even losing things like resources at the end of the game, at the end of their battle. Even though there's they don't give you a score, but it basically tallies up what you did, and then it gives you like a, this is how much gold you made, this is how much experience these people made. So I don't know. I'm going to keep playing it, though, and I'm going to see how that goes. I do feel like there's got to be a point where it really opens up and then it starts getting hard, because if it's the same thing like this for now into the end of the game, that's going to be ridiculous. That's crazy.
I mean, is it?
And it's a vanillaware game, so it's got to have some zhuzh. Like, they have to know how to make games, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, 13 Sentinels absolutely had that.
That was sick.
Yeah, that absolutely had it.
And like, that was hard.
Yeah, the end of, I mean, Odin Sphere absolutely had that. Dragon's Crown did, like, I would definitely, I'm curious to see what it would be like in five more hours.
But 13 Sentinels.
I'm so the opposite. I'm like, drop this game.
That's what I'm thinking too, but it's like got a good anime aesthetic, and I'm like a sucker for a good anime aesthetic.
But also if you're playing a game, and say it's 25 hours, you played 10, so you're about halfway, theoretically about halfway through. If not, 10 hours is a good chunk of your life.
That seems pretty long.
And you spent 10 hours of your life.
I did
fall
asleep a few times.
10 hours of your life to this game.
Yeah.
And it has not rewarded you yet. Like, you don't deserve my next 15 hours.
I might have fallen asleep for one or two of those hours. Okay.
Still,
I hear you.
I mean, I just feel like that's disrespectful of your time.
Yeah. But it's pretty.
I mean, if you're enjoying it, then you're enjoying it.
I enjoy looking at it. I don't really enjoy talking to people or killing them. Like, it's fine.
Or playing it.
It's just whatever. Okay. Okay. We'll see where that goes. I'm going to give it another week or so. Second game is Animal Well. So the reviews that I was hearing about was basically like, this game is so good that you shouldn't read this review. You should just play the game and go in blind. And so far I have gone in blind. I won't tell you anything particular about the game itself, but it is a Metroidvania. It is aesthetically and ambiance pleasing for sure. There's so far really no dialogue or story that I've come across. I've played for only like 3 or 4 hours now at this point, and it's like, it's been fun. But it's interesting because it's like, so just figure it out. It's like, you're just walking around and you're like trying to uncover stuff and you're like, oh, this kind of looks like that. And then you're like, clip, clap, and it clicks in and you're like, oh shit, that's cool. And then this new area opens up and you get like some new abilities, but like,
that's cool.
Otherwise, I'm still not really sure what I'm doing or why I'm doing it. So I wouldn't say that bugs me, but it doesn't, it like,
does it motivate you?
This game only motivates me when I'm like, oh, I have a drink and I'm going to do something, but I don't want to do Overlord Unicorn right now, Unicorn Overlord. And I don't really feel like playing Nier right now. So let's jump into this game that I actually have no idea what I'm doing.
Keep your hands busy.
Yeah, right. Like, I'm just going to play this game. And it's like, it is fun. And some of the mechanics in the game are pretty dicey. So I do feel like there's like a learning curve. Like, you can do some pretty interesting things with some of the items that you get, which makes me think that either it's supposed to be like that or it's supposed to like open you up to higher ceilings of skill, therefore then you can like get to places similar to like I would say like a Mario game, right? Where it's like yeah. when you learn the mechanics, then you can start doing some crazy shit and getting to places that you didn't think you could get yet.
Yeah, see that's it's so funny. Like there was a certain point in Metroidvanias where everyone so obviously the progenitor of Metroidvanias are Castlevania Symphony of the Night and Super Metroid. And something that was interesting about both of those games that I think most people tend to gravitate towards when they think of like what makes a good Metroidvania is non-disclosed movement mechanics and basically like hidden elements of the game that exist that are core to the game's function without mm-hmm. them overtly telling you. Mm-hmm. So like in Castlevania, it's all of the spells. Like in Symphony of the Night, like for those that haven't played Symphony of the Night, there are spells that you can do in the game. Like you have a magic meter, but typically the game instructs you that the magic meter is used with sub weapons, like when you're throwing holy waters and shit like that. Mm-hmm. But if you do Street Fighter style command prompts, like if you do like quarter circle forward, back, forward, back or something, and then hit a button, you'll do these insanely overpowered magic spells like hellfire, like shooting fireballs or turning invisible or like, you know, oh my gosh, there's one that's called like a blood manifest where like any enemy that bleeds, if you activate this thing, you'll heal every time. There's a lot of cool stuff. Soul Steal is obviously the best one. It like damages everything on screen. It's fucking sick. But the game never tells you that these things exist. Like you would just need to figure out that you could do these things. There's literally not a document. There's nothing in the game that tells you that you could do these things. In Super Metroid, the example is Shine Spark. So Shine Spark is a movement mechanic that is illustrated to you by another character in the game, but is never described and isn't written in the manual. And it's a very weird way of doing it. It's like you have to reach like super speed where you're flashing and then hit down really quickly to hold the charge. And then you jump and hit a direction and you'll fly in that direction. Now, it's a ridiculously overpowered movement mechanic, but yeah. it's fairly technical and pretty complicated for the game to not give you any indication of how it actually works.
Yeah.
Wall jumping That's is cool. also sort of along the same lines. Now, but the reason why I mentioned those two things in particular are those are, I guess, what people would call hidden mechanics in the game. But like nowadays when people, you know, when they're making Metroidvanias, you'll have something that might be like really straightforward. Like yeah. I would consider something like Hollow Knight.
Right.
Pretty straightforward. Like that game's not hiding anything from you. Yeah. Like that's just what it is.
Cards on
but
the table.
Something like Animal World, the way you're describing it, I'm like that they're probably leaning into something. There's probably something happening in the game that you don't know about.
I feel like that's probably happening. And for the fact that all the reviewers are saying, don't even read the review, just go in blind, makes me feel like it might be some type of like Undertale experience.
Yeah.
But I haven't felt
Sounds
that.
Like it.
It feels more like just explore and have fun. And like I am doing that and it is interesting, a little creepy at times. And I kind of like that like fun, atmospheric, hinging on creepy, but not really creepy. And you're like a little blob like rolling around and it's kind of adorable. So I don't know. I'm going to keep playing that game, too. I have a little bit more interest in that game than
Unicorn Overlord.
You should play Bellatro.
I did talk
about that, too, today.
You did? When you mentioned that, yeah. I was like, dude, you're going to be hooked.
Everyone's talking about Bellatro.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I'm down to try that, too. What were you about to say?
I would like you to play, to finish the game, the Animal...
Animal Well?
Animal Well?
Tell
yeah.
you?
Because I... Yeah.
Okay.
I want to know if I should play.
Yeah, it's only $20. It's pretty cheap, you know?
It's free on PlayStation Plus Extra.
Right now?
Yeah.
Do I have Extra?
No.
Probably no, not. I have Essentials. Yeah. What's Extra? How much is that?
I don't know.
$70 a year?
I signed up for the highest tier one.
If I cancel my Game Pass, I'll buy it. Actually, that's what I'll do tonight.
You should definitely do that.
All right. Is it? It's only this month?
Yeah, but you already paid for it.
Yeah, but like I would like it free on PlayStation as well.
Oh, you have it on Switch.
Yeah, I did because I wanted to play it on the plane. But like, truth be told, like I kind of want to play it. And like,
there's a lot of good stuff on Extra. Dave the Diver is on Extra.
I already have that on Switch too.
Yeah, that feels like a Switch game to me.
Yeah. Anyway, it does feel like a good Switch game. But like, I don't know. So maybe some people want to. Do you guys want to watch me play it? No, I'm just
joking. I like playing on PlayStation. I play everything on PlayStation.
Anyway, so that's what I'm playing.
Trophies.
Shall we get into the news?
Let's get into the news. We'll go pretty fast. The topics are fairly shallow today. First one, we got the announcement of a new Assassin's Creed game, Assassin's Creed Shadows. It's in Japan.
Love it.
I actually do like it a lot. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the Ghost of Tsushima aesthetic, and by that I mean like the Japanese samurai slash ninja aesthetic, is really like overplayed at this point. It's been 4 or 5 years, guys. Like, come on. Go somewhere else. But it's funny because like I never really...
I'm also playing Rasputin right now.
Yeah, I know. But see, I would never... I never thought like Assassin's Creed could go ninja, and I... Of course. Like,
samurai.
It makes so much...
Samurai.
Sorry,
wasn't there an Assassin's Creed ninja game? Rogue, maybe? I could have sworn there was...
Rogue was like...
Thief?
The what?
Back on 360?
It was not ninjas. That doesn't sound familiar. Hmm. But honestly, playing Rise of Ronin, there are some things in it, like I was saying, where I'm like, Assassin's Creed does this better. Yeah. I'm like, and when I saw that trailer, I was like, that game is going to be...
That's what I want.
Right? That game is going to be everything this game isn't.
Yeah. Actually,
that's called Assassin's Creed Chronicles. Assassin's Creed Chronicles China.
Oh.
Yeah, but that was like a offshoot.
Tell me it was a mobile game.
Yeah, I think it was a mobile game.
Because I have played Assassin's Creed on my Nokia way back in the day, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
PlayStation 4.
Well, I have no idea. I had no idea there was a China-based Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed Chronicles China.
That must have either not been marketed or it sucked.
I don't...
I knew I saw another one. I've
never heard of that.
Yeah.
This game, but this though, one, I'll could get me back into Assassin's Creed games.
That last shot with the hidden blade... Turning into like a kunai, yeah. I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I like the idea of shurikens. I love the idea of ninjas and samurais. So like that, I didn't really care about the, I don't know, the eastward trend of, or the westward trend of Assassin's Creed. It's just like after Italy with Ezio, like I was all about that. And then eventually it just kind of got overplayed. They did the whole Valhalla thing and the Native American thing, right?
Yeah.
I didn't really care about that too much, but this seems cool.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. I'm curious who this new character is.
I'm surprised.
The Black Samurai?
Black Samurai in China or Japan or wherever they are.
Voice by
The Chronicles games are 2.5D side-scrolling platformers.
Yeah.
Oh, I would never play that or talk about it.
I mean, yeah.
It's an Assassin's Creed game that took place
in the Eastern
continents.
Yeah.
You shut your mouth. I'm down.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't need a lot of convincing to play an Assassin's Creed game.
We know.
I'm just gonna lean into it. I wasn't always, and I was like, should I play the Assassin's Creed game? I don't know, they're not offering a lot. But I'm just was, you know, like it's like comfort food, just like the Call of Duty. I'm just gonna get it every year.
Just be true to your heart, Liz. Be true to your heart.
Yeah. That being said, I did not finish the last Assassin's Creed game I was playing because I got distracted by something else. I realized
Mirage.
I pulled out Mirage. Yeah, I pulled out. I put in Rise of Ronin, and I was like, oh, there might be a disc in here. I hit eject, and Assassin's Creed came out, and I was like, ooh, the changing of the guard.
That's so funny. Wow, you bought a disc for Rise of Ronin.
Right, because I thought somebody might want to play it.
Wow.
That's so sweet. That's the nicest thing I've ever heard.
I should have done that with Stellar Blade. I should have.
I wish you did.
I should have.
Because
I don't
want to
buy
like,
it.
I know.
I've realized that like I'm going to buy games physically in case other people want to play them, unless it's a game like Final Fantasy, where like, I got to play it now. Like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like Final Fantasy VII, I'm like, I want to play it on launch day. Like,
all right.
This is a game,
I'll
like,
the same thing.
I was like, I can wait until tomorrow to play this game, right?
Yeah.
Like, Amazon can deliver it in a day. Like, yeah. I'm not gonna...
This would absolutely be the season to do that because we're all encumbered right now.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And you're buying so many games. And I'm like, that game was $70. And I'm like, this is like.
That's so nice of you to think of us.
It's going to be so expensive.
Mm. I just have such a problem with games that are installed, but then I don't have the disc, and then like I see the icon where it's like it needs a disc, and that bothers me.
Dude, that's
I do have OCD.
With Gran Turismo. It bothers me so much with Gran Turismo.
Yeah,
because like that game I want installed all the time, but it's like 120 gigs.
Yeah,
now.
Right. It's so much. Yeah, it's also a game that's like not a game I'm gonna flip back and forth.
Between,
you know, like this is a game like I'm gonna play, I'm gonna finish it, you know.
Yeah.
Or I'm gonna put it down and I'm gonna quit.
You know what's so funny? Weird random install that I did recently. Burnout Paradise is still fucking good.
That game is great.
Small.
That game is great. Good, yeah. Did you get it for like $2 when it was on sale?
I got it a while ago when you told me that.
Yeah.
It's $2 now?
No, yeah. there was some sale that I got it for some insanely low price. Dude, I love that game.
I installed it the other day and I just wanted to like, I'm just going to play this game. And I was like, oh yeah, this is
dude,
exactly what I do.
Looked it up.
That's exactly what I want.
That was the first platinum I ever got. For, wow. Like, I love that game. Also, that soundtrack is killer.
I did realize that as well.
Killer soundtrack. Some brand new is on there. Some Kill Switch Engage. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Anyway. Okay. Going
I love
back.
Racing
Assassin's
games.
Creed.
Low key, I really like racing games. Like.
Pretty high key.
High key.
High key, low key.
Digging the racing games.
Yeah. We definitely have talked about it. Yeah. Like, nobody's surprised by that.
Yeah, that's fine. You're good.
Well, new Assassin's Creed looks dope.
Yeah. I'm into it.
Liz will give her full review when the time comes.
I will.
I will buy that game too, probably.
And I'm going to buy it physically.
If you buy it physically, I won't play it first.
In the world of Ubisoft, we got another announcement from them, a cancellation, actually. Mm. Their free-to-play open-world Division game called The Division Heartland got canceled.
Understandable. I think that IP is like pretty run dry at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, last one we played got very good reviews, but we quit pretty quickly.
It was also like...
Division 2 was fine, but it was janky.
Yeah.
That was the problem. If it was 60 FPS and not janky...
It was a little janky.
It was kind of shit.
I think there's something to be said about the run and overplayed apocalyptic like world kind of survival aesthetic. Game.
I agree with that.
Like, I think it's over. I think Last of Us is like the only one that I'll open myself up to nowadays.
Yeah.
But I do know what's
at the same time, I mean, like, you think that things are over, but if the game is good, the game is good.
That's true.
Same with the show. Like, I would think we'd be over that aesthetic, but I watched all the Fallout show because it was good.
Yeah, the Fallout show was
great. Right? Like, I don't care that that's overdone. Same thing with Last of Us.
I,
like,
in fact,
zombies were over when Last of Us came out, but, like, Last of Us is, like, the greatest game of all time. Yeah. So,
and actually,
play.
good point.
Stellar Blade does take place in an apocalypse, like, you know, plants are growing on crumbling
sexy cyborg ladies, okay?
Yeah. It's not enough to like inspire me to play something. Like, you know, like, there are certain things that like, you know, like when Horizon came out, I'm like, all right, robot dinosaurs, whatever this game is, I'm going to play it. Right? It doesn't matter if it's good or bad.
Robot dinosaurs,
like, you know what I mean? But like, and so like, you know, post-apocalyptic, I'm like, that's not inspiring
me. Horizon, I would say like, doesn't fit that post-apocalyptic... though I know it is, it doesn't fit that same aesthetic. Like, Division is like, I'm in New York City, and it's gritty, and, like, something happened where I now need to uncover the reasons why everybody's
picks up
garbage
anymore. That's what I mean. It's not doing it any favors, but if it was, like, a very solid game in spite of that, it wouldn't matter. Kind of.
Fair.
That's fair.
But it would be better to start with something interesting or fresh.
Like anything.
Yeah.
But is anything fresh nowadays? I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know.
Stellar Blade is fresh.
You said it's so much like Neon.
Yeah, you said it wasn't fresh at all. I mean...
I'm joking.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of Nier, next bit of news. Yoko Taro, famed game developer, says that he is working on a new game that might be Nier, or it might not be Nier. That's the only quote that we have. Frankly, I don't care. This guy is of the level of game developer that I'm just like, I just trust what you're doing. Yeah. Like, he's... approaching Kojima level type stuff where it's just like, yeah, man, like what Nier Automata did, like, I don't know. You got to have vision to make something like that happen, you know? And I can respect this guy
a lot. That's the right use of vision, right? Yeah. And of like, let the artists do what they want.
Totally.
Because the way that they're interpreting the media is like something we can't even fathom.
Yeah. Nobody's telling them to keep it on track.
Yeah.
They're just keep it.
You want to do that? Go for it.
Yeah, just do it. So
someone could rein in Kojima a little bit.
that news is literally like he still has a job. Like, I feel like he would obviously be making a new game,
right?
Why wouldn't he?
He's not retired.
Yeah,
and they've
he's
got
still working.
They've got Yosuke Sato, that was the producer, Yoko Taro, the director.
Is that
and
the guy that came out during the Nier concert with the moon helmet?
Yeah, and okay. Keiichi Okabe, the composer on it as well.
Cool, I think he also likes the like trollingness of it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Am I making Nier? Am I not making Nier?
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Just so a million fanboys will all be like, is it Nier?
Yeah, right, exactly. Is it Nier?
That's and funny. Then it'll be like Nier, but like spelt backwards or something.
It's going to be called Far.
I think it's going to be Nier, Nier Adjacent.
Yeah.
Like, not
that's
quite.
That's the name of it.
Nier, called Around.
Yeah.
That's funny.
All right. Last bit of news that we got. This is
a story
about
a girl.
It's not a story about a girl.
Nice.
This is news coming out of Square Enix, fresh after their rousing success of Resident Evil, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. They made this basically new aggressive business plan. I just want to figure out exactly where this was discussed. The plan, which the publisher dubbed Square Enix Reboots and Awakens, lays out a 3-year strategy, which it hopes will lead to long-term growth. And one of the core pillars of this new strategy is to aggressively pursue multi-platform strategies that include Nintendo platforms, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. So the idea here is that the last 3 games that Square made at a major AAA level were PlayStation exclusives, and apparently they all came under expectations.
Yeah.
So now they're saying like, okay, well, I think
they're right.
I think they're probably right. I don't think it's not like that big of a deal, but realistically what that means is they're probably going to try to squeeze more money out of PlayStation.
Well, Rebirth is also coming out on PC next month, I think.
But like later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and
okay.
Remake
and
came out later.
Kind of hype has died down.
Yeah. I don't know if Final Fantasy 16 is out on PC yet. I think it will be.
I'll fact check.
Yeah. But to have it come out like day and date on these other consoles, I think is a big deal. I don't know why they would include Nintendo. Like, they're already doing stuff with Nintendo in that way. So the thought of including them on like a giant AAA, like, you're not getting Final Fantasy 16 on Switch. You're just not, you know?
When PC date to be announced.
There you go.
Okay. So it's going to come.
So if they're going to do a day and date, that will change stuff up. But I think really what that's going to change is how much Sony plays them to keep a timed exclusive, or it'll just raise their bottom line. Because like if they were reporting back like a loss or a downtrend to shareholders and they needed to come up with an excuse, they could say, well, we could just make more money up here by, you know, porting our game to different platforms and letting it be a thing.
I wonder how Rebirth performed compared to Remake.
Definitely worse.
Yeah, it has to be, right?
Without
but like how much worse, you know? And like how much more money did they spend on Rebirth? Because I really do look at Rebirth and I'm like, damn, it's a lot of games
going on, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not terribly surprising news given that we've already had so many bits of news about how they were unhappy with the performance of those games, even though they were reviewed very well and seemingly sold very well. Like, we all thought they sold well. It turns out they didn't.
Yeah, even 16, I thought was on par, you know?
They said that
they said it was a PlayStation 5
problem.
It
was a disappointment. Like, on the sales.
I don't think I've heard Square be like, we are pleased with the results of
maybe that's
blank
just like,
game.
Yeah. Maybe that's just what Japanese studios are like.
Yeah, they're also like, consoles are so expensive. Like, that was a big problem, right, when PlayStation 5 games were first coming out, is they were like, we can't get them in people's hands because people don't have PlayStation 5s because there's all these, like, logistical issues. And on top of that, they're so expensive and, like, they're not... They can't make enough money. When games are going to be so expensive to make and they only cost an extra $10, like...
But PlayStation 5 has sold really well. Like, there are a lot in there. Like, it's a lot. Like, is it over 20 mil at this point?
PlayStation 5s?
Sold. Yeah, I remember...
Yeah, I think we're well over that.
Right? So, like, they're not doing...
Rebirth
poorly.
Should have been okay by now.
I mean, assume so, right? But...
Yeah, it's also a sequel. I guess sequels are always a little...
Yeah.
Sell a little bit worse than their predecessors. But, yeah, it's a bummer that they were disappointed in those sales because those games are good despite any qualms we had with them. Like, they are solid games that we all enjoyed on some level, except Alex. But
Sony has sold over 59 million PlayStation 5 consoles.
Yeah, that's huge.
I mean,
that's
huge.
Enough to be able to move some games
by end of life cycle. PlayStation 4 was at 100 mil, so like
PS4,
yeah,
and we're already supposedly at the end of this.
Well, we're at like mid gen, so
PlayStation 5 has been out for 5 years now.
Yeah, so PS5 Pro will likely come out before the end of this year or early next year.
That makes sense. Yeah,
and then we'll probably have like 3 more years after that.
It just doesn't feel like PlayStation 5 is really like flexed enough yet. You know, like I feel like there's so much more left to do.
I think the game has just changed a little bit, where it's like if we're measuring that in like, let's say, first party console exclusives, like there's just going to be less on newer consoles. Like, they just, They take too long and they cost too much money.
Yeah.
You know?
How sad.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, we got Ragnarok, that, like, we got Spider-Man 2, we got Forbidden West, Returnal.
Yeah. Returnal.
Miles
yeah.
Morales.
Final Miles Fantasy. Morales was PS4.
Final Fantasy VII, yeah, I got that on PS4. Pro.
Rebirth was PS5. 16 was PS5.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those weren't like, well, I guess they were console exclusive.
I think going forward, hot take for Justin Chow, I'm just not going to buy superhero games anymore.
This is not.
I feel
not
like super. I felt like Spider-Man should have been scratched some itch. I just didn't do it.
Well, Spider-Man did do something for you the first time around.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
But this Assassin's Creed game looks good. Maybe I'm just like a sucker for a specific type of aesthetic. I don't know, man. I don't know. Anyway,
could be.
Maybe. Yeah, I thought that game was pretty compelling.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Story-wise.
So you're not going to be all over Wolverine when it comes out, or Venom?
Nah, I'll play it over here when I come before the podcast, and I'll see what it's like, and then it'll be good.
Honestly, next month, we're probably going to get the PlayStation.
I think you'll buy it. I think you'll buy it and then not play it. It's going to be another Resident... It's going to sit right next to Resident Evil on your shelf.
Bro, you just got to play Resident Evil 4, man.
I know!
That's the one. Right, we'll do that. That's the one.
I'm going to play that. He said confidently.
I wish I lived in that world.
Where you could still play Resident Evil 4 for the first time.
Play for the first time again. God, it was so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was very good.
Liz is saying it, Justin, I respect your opinion, but Liz is...
No, I'm a fanboy.
Particularly unique.
Yeah. This is my my first and only Resident Evil game, actually.
Wow. My first and only and ever.
Yeah. Actually, in the realm of survival horror games, there is a new indie game that came out called Crow Country that is supposed to be pretty cool.
I did hear about Crow Country as well.
Yeah, I downloaded it. It's somewhere on the list.
We're talking about it, yeah.
Yeah, it's somewhere on the list. We've got that.
On the list, on the backlog list?
You know, I have been adjourning certain games from that list, though. So, like, Balatro, I'm, like, still playing actively, but it's something that, like, it's not going to be a primary focus game. It's absolutely just going to be, like, a side thing that I play sometimes. I think I'm adjourning Pacific Drive, because I turned it back on. I went back into it, and I tried to, like, get into it again. But it's 30 FPS, and it's just so... It's like it's a hard survival game. And when I say hard, I don't mean like difficult. I mean like almost everything you're doing is about survival. So it's like making sure you have enough gas and you're repairing parts of the car and you know you've got the right resources so you can do these like runs or whatever. And I'm just like,
only a survival game.
Yeah. So it's like,
there's nothing else.
I guess I'm just not compelled enough by it to really be like activated. So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna choose happiness and I'm gonna let that one slide.
I'm very impressed. Yeah. Right now.
Baby steps, you know.
Yeah.
And then
you're a grown up. You have stuff to do.
I do have stuff to do. I got to beat Persona 3 Reload at some point. That's got to happen.
I totally forgot I bought that game.
Yeah, that's got to happen at some point. And I do want to play Unicorn Overlord. I mean, even in spite of what we're hearing, like, I still am compelled. Honestly, just because I really love Vanillaware games.
Yeah.
And I have confidence that they would deliver and not crap product.
Don't you not... Are you not a big tactics guy though?
I'm like modest with tactics stuff. Yeah. Like I like Fire Emblem, but I don't like Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah,
it's a weird place to be. So there's a lot of stuff, but Stellar Blade I'm totally enjoying. Like what's nice about this game is because of its linearity and fairly like I don't know streamlined action. Nature.
Sorry.
It's like I could just play that game. And I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and enjoy this. And I'm not going to really care and worry about playing it too fast or, you know, getting to the next thing right away. I'm just having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's honestly kind of how I felt playing Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
It's like you're just playing it. You're just like, I'm playing a game right now.
Exactly.
There's like just a specific feeling. Like other games you play, you know, you're like, either you're thinking, like, you know, sometimes they have a different feeling to them.
Yeah.
And sometimes you sit down and play a game and you're just like, I feel like I'm playing a video game right now. Yeah. Like I'm in it. I know exactly what to do and where to go. And it's given me everything I need.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We're in an interesting time. And I'm sure we'll have more to discuss going forward. Actually, I was going to open it, but we're way too late right now. the rumor right now is next month there's going to be a State of Play and a Nintendo Direct. Whoa. So we'll theory craft around that.
What the hell's
that.
Going on with Nintendo?
Yeah,
we'll see.
Probably nothing.
I'm sure they'll give us nothing.
We'll theory craft around this.
I'm hoping
the next
that Nintendo Switch Pro or 2, like that, they officially announced that that is a real thing. But
there are specs. But
right.
We'll dig into all of this likely next week.
Okay.
For now, we're going to wrap up this episode of the Curt Raid Podcast. Guys, it has been real.
It's been fake.
No, it has been very real. It's been fun. Everyone, come over to critrate.io. Check out what we got going on. New games going up every single day. Dig into that back end. There's so many games on there now. It's like every day I'm in there throwing something up. But
you're doing that, Justin, man.
100%.
It's really robust right now.
100%. But until next time, thank you, Liz. And thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Justin.
And thank you, listeners. We'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.